This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand with Matt Rooney.
We made it to Memorial Day weekend, folks. Even though the weekend weather ain't looking too summery, but you make do with what you got. That's what we do here on the Matt Rooney Show. We improvise. Every Saturday, that's when the show is broadcast. And then, of course, you could find the Matt Rooney Show in podcast format now. Everywhere awesome podcasts are found. And I have an even more special treat for you this weekend, ladies and gentlemen, this long holiday weekend. We have the return of the one, the only, Justin Otero, who I hear is big in Japan.
Many people are saying big star in Japan.
Big star in Japan. If you didn't buy the shirt at the airport, I'm going to be disappointed.
I bought so much stuff. More stuff than I probably should have, but you know, when in Rome, or in this case, when in Tokyo, you got to do what you got to do.
When in Tokyo. Did you like it?
Oh my God. I love that place so much.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
So I'll be honest with you. And look, I've never been to Japan. I have a really good friend who went for a while and told me about it. It didn't sound too appetizing. But you tell me, I'm curious. Convince me to travel there.
Well, are you a big fan of like seafood, first of all?
I'll eat it. It's like salad. I know it's good for me. I'll have it situationally.
Like, and it's fresh too. It's like straight out of the bay. They pull it in the morning and then it's ready for you whenever you want it.
I don't like sushi.
Okay. Well, even if you don't like sushi, there's so many other choices. The ramen, I don't know if you're a big ramen head, but there's this one, it's kind of fast foodish in Japan, but it's not, it's called Ichiran. You can get this big bowl, and I mean, it's American portions when you're thinking about it.
Right.
Probably, I'd say, for about $5-6, you can get any of the toppings that you want, anything you could think of, any spice level, if you're a spice head, $6. And it is genuinely, they're open 24 hours, so you can go whenever you feel like it. And it's genuinely, I miss it so badly.
I can feel it and hear it in your voice, man. This is like someone pining for a long lost lover. You know,
Do you have a picture of ramen on your nightstand?
Do you have a picture of ramen on your nightstand?
I miss it so much. I see the.
I kind of feel like I need to give you a hug right now, man. You're seriously going through some stuff. I mean, I like Americanized Japanese food. Is there a Benihana's over there? I love hibachi.
There's a bunch of different hibachi places, and even the American fast food. Like, you know, they have their McDonald's, their KFC, right. Shake Shack. I had.
You had Japanese Shake Shack.
Shake Shack is incredible. I haven't had Shake Shack in the United States. The first time I had Shake Shack, which is weird, was in Kyoto.
That was your first time.
It was like, it's not as greasy as it is in America. Like it's cleaner, so you don't feel like death after eating it. But.
So you're saying if RFK Jr. wants a cheeseburger from Shake Shack, he should hightail it over to Japan because he's probably going to like it.
Most 100%.
A little bit healthier. They probably demand it over there. They probably demand it.
I think they
do. It's a healthier culture.
You will walk. I don't think I walked less than 25,000 steps a day for 2 weeks. So I probably, despite my gluttonous behavior on ramen and foo and other delicious Japanese treats, I probably lost like maybe 10 pounds, I think, at the end of the day.
I'm a little bit worried about your hypertension right now. We need to take your blood pressure, all that salt from the ramen. You could probably float right now if we dropped you in a bucket of water. Maybe we should try it, although it's a little bit chilly outside this week, so it might not be the best thing. Don't want to give you hypothermia now that you're blessedly back with us. Well, I am glad you had a good time, my friend. I cannot promise you that our show will be as fun as a trip to Asia, but we do have plenty of interesting things in store for our fans and friends on this episode of the Matt Rooney Show, including, we got to talk about New Jersey, because I'm from New Jersey, you know that, I love the Garden State, but we are only a few weeks away from a gubernatorial election, and this week, Tuesday night, we had the final Republican gubernatorial debate, for which yours truly was a co-host and a panelist. It was a lot less, speaking of salt, Justin, it was a lot less salty than the first one we did back in February. Not nearly as many punches thrown. Truthfully, one of the most noticeable and memorable punches thrown during the entire thing was at me. Yours truly, if you could believe it, as lovable and as likable as I am. We'll get into that a little bit later in the hour. But it was crazy substantive. We got them to talk about issues that some New Jersey political watchers forgot were a thing and actually directly impact your property taxes. But that's what a 2.5 hour debate does. 2.5 hours. Some people doubted that it was a good idea, but it made it so that the vitriol and the energy that the candidates brought to the stage to go at each other kind of drained off very quickly. Kind of like a morning dew, right? When the sun hits it, it just kind of dries right up. That's what happened. And we got a lot of compliments on it. You know, give myself a pat on the back. I'm never shy about that. We're going to be joined here shortly by my good friend David Wildstein of the New Jersey Globe. He was the principal sponsor of the debate, my co-panelist. We're going to talk about the Republican race, the Democrats, who had their final debate on Sunday, just a couple nights before the GOP debate, and of course get David's take on the lay of the land heading into the final stretch here. It's a big year. The New Jersey gubernatorial is pretty much the only game in town. The Virginia race isn't widely accepted to be that competitive at this point. So if you're a political junkie, I don't know what to tell you. The Eastern Banks of the Delaware is where you need to focus over the course of the coming months, and the Matt Rooney Show will, of course, help you with that. And we'll have more on some other topics as well, including the big, beautiful bill. We had a big MAHA announcement this week, and I'll see what else is in my bag of tricks, assuming, of course, we have time. Remember, you can find me over on X at Matt Rooney NJ and our podcast any time of week, any time of day, over on all the places, Spotify, Apple iTunes. I saw we were on UK Amazon, so if you're over coming back from Japan like Justin, you get a layover in London, well, good news. You got something to do at Heathrow now. You can listen to the Matt Rooney Show.
You big bruv guy, Matt Rooney.
Yeah?
Apparently, if you're on UK Amazon, you're a big bruv guy.
I guess, right? Who knew? I'm learning new things all the time around here, Justin. That's what we excel at 1210. WPHD. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to our friend David Wildstein here on the Matt Rooney Show.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHD On Demand. On Demand.
We promise you a good one, another barn burner, and we are not going to disappoint here on 1210 WPHD. And how could it be anything less than a success with Justin Otero back where he belongs in the producer booth? I am glad to see you, my friend. It feels like I haven't talked to you in a few months.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I'm back, stuck in the producer's cage where it, like you said, it seems like that's where I belong.
Yes, whether you like it or not, that's where you belong, my friend. And don't you move again, especially since we can't find Dez. I have not seen Dez in about 3 years. I think he's on an island like Tom Hanks in Castaway talking to a volleyball at this point, but we'll send help eventually, Dez, if you're catching this broadcast on the desert island upon which you are marooned. But let's get down to business here, because as I mentioned in the opening segment of this program, it was a very big week in New Jersey politics. It started on Sunday night with the Democrat debate, the final clash between the candidates heading into the June 10th primary election. But plenty of folks were paying attention just two nights later to the Republican debate. Only three candidates on the stage for that one, but a very interesting encounter between them all the same, not just because yours truly was one of the panelists asking the questions, but there are many indicators that suggest that this could be one of the most competitive gubernatorial cycles in a good long while. So who better to help us understand what happened this week and to help us lay the groundwork for what's to come over the next few than the man who was the primary sponsor of the debates over the course of the past several days. He is the proprietor of the New Jersey Globe, which is, if you haven't visited already, you need to make it a daily part of your routine because it is the website of record for New Jersey political news, whether we're talking about the big flashy headlines or the stuff that slips between the cracks. Without further ado, David Wildstein, editor of the New Jersey Globe, welcome back to the Matt Rooney Show, my friend. Long time no talk.
Yeah, it's been like a couple days. Wow, you know, and I miss you already. I really do.
and you're not exaggerating. I mean, you're exaggerating about the missing me part, but how many total raw hours of broadcast did the NJ Globe have this past week?
Oh, this was amazing. So between the Democratic debate on the 18th and the Republican on the 20th, each debate was 2.5 hours. So it's 5 hours of debating. With on New Jersey, we did a pre-show and then a post-show. So we did nearly 12 hours of live television over two nights in a 3-day period.
How long was your flight to Japan, Justin?
My flight was 14 hours going there, 12 hours coming back.
So almost one way to Japan. That's how much broadcasting New Jersey Globe put out there in the ether. And look, I'm not just saying this because
Justin was in a first class seat and we were in these folding chairs. So.
That is true. He was probably much more comfortable than we were.
I wish I could afford first class seats. I was in business. I was in economy with the rest of us.
That's right. That's right. But I'm sure you had a fun time all the same, my friend, squished in the aisles. But seriously, you know, many people heading into this debate, David, said to me, and I suspect they said the same to you, guys, this is exciting. We love New Jersey politics. We want to hear from the candidates. But 2.5 hours? What can you possibly accomplish with 2.5 hours? Isn't that too long? I think, especially the Republican debate, but I'm biased, that was one of the more substantive candidate forums I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think so. And some people said we were all crazy for doing it. But, you know, first of all, this was one of the officially sanctioned debates from ELEC. Right. And in exchange for getting $5.5 million in matching funds to run your campaign from the taxpayers, all they have to do is two debates. And so the hourly rate of an hour, you know, in the first debate and then ours 2.5, they get $5.5 million for three and a half hours work, which is almost your billing rate, but still pretty good. Still pretty good. And
if I billed at that, I could have afforded to buy Justin his first class ticket to Japan.
I know.
Next time, bud.
But you know, the reality is if you have 2.5 hours to talk about the issues, you can't hide behind a soundbite. You have to get into detail. You have to say, you know, not just what you're going to do, but explain how you're going to do it. And we divided these debates. The Republican debate, for example, was first third was affordability and taxes, and then education, and then crime and law enforcement. And, you know, we had a 45-minute substantive discussion about people keeping people safe in New Jersey. That's an issue that Republican primary voters care about. And when you have these short form debates, you know, where it's just 50 something minutes at best, on a good day, you're going to get if you're governor, how would you reduce the crime rate? And we got into all sorts of specific issues that allow voters to listen to these candidates and say, you know what, this is the person that I want to be in a relationship with for the next 4 to 8 years. This is somebody that I want to see lead my state. And you know, I think there should be more long form debates than short ones.
I'm with you, and I agree now that we live through it, because you had everything. If you're an undecided primary voter in New Jersey, you had everything now to evaluate, to make your decision if you haven't done so already. Because again, we touched on just about everything that matters, and we were able to touch on it, as David said, in depth. Now, of course, the ultimate question here, and I'm not going to be boorish and ask you to predict who's going to win, because, you know, who knows, right? And that's not any fun anyway. But on debate night, let's start with the Democrats on Sunday night. Who do you think did themselves the most good?
So you know, I'm reticent given the conflict of interest there to pick winners and losers, but you have to start with Mikie Sherrill, because she's the front runner, and when you are the front runner, the number one objective in a debate is to do no harm.
Right.
And she, you know, she did well. I think they all did well. Nobody on either side of the aisle had a weak debate performance. And Mikie Sherrill, you know, went into the debate as the front runner, and she came out as the front runner. And, you know, on the Republican side, it's the same thing with Jack Cittarelli. Jack is the front runner. He's got, you know, he got the president's endorsement. This is his third Republican gubernatorial debate. You know, I mean, I'm not saying three in total. It would have been, you know, 2-4. This would have been his sixth since 2017. He knows how to do this. He came out solid. Spadia was really good. I mean, John Bramnick, I mean, you know, this was probably the best I'd ever seen him. And I mean, he was legitimately funny. He was, you know, he was frank and honest. And you know, Matt, that's what, you know, you and I are both sitting at the same table. What we saw is you can't get away with just some BS answers and run out a clock at 55 minutes. You know, you really got to know your stuff. If you don't know what you're talking about, in a long form that'll show, these two guys, these three guys, you know, were solid, but Sherrill and Cittarelli, you know, they didn't do any harm. They certainly, you know, probably helped themselves and, you know, gave voters what they wanted.
Right. That's kind of how I was thinking of it. It's your goal to do yourself no harm if you are in the lead. And just like car commercials are designed to reinforce your confidence in a brand, not necessarily to go out there and buy something new that you're not already driving. I think that's what the front runners arguably did the other night. I think if you were leaning towards one of those candidates on the respective sides of the aisle, they didn't give you any reason to want to change what you're driving. So the question now becomes, and you're a pro, because long before you were writing about politics, you were an operative. What do these campaigns do over the course of the final few weeks? We know we're going to look at X on social media, and we're going to see pictures of them in diners shaking hands and kissing babies. What can campaigns do from here to the close to try to impact their position?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, you know, and this is a big difference from when I ran campaigns in the 70s and the 80s is, you know, you say you're going to see pictures, and I challenge, like, where are you going to see them? Because we don't have newspapers anymore. So they're not going to send photographers out to take pictures, and you're not going to, you know, TV stations don't cover Jersey. So,
yeah,
you know,
the Star Ledger's not showing up to your town hall.
You know, they're not showing up to the Star Ledger anymore. So it's no big deal there. But so you're going to see it on social media. They're going to have to, you know, put these out themselves. But now it's the function of, you know, they've got to turn their votes out. You know, my old, you know, friend, late Bob Franks used to say, this is all good. These are all great tactics, but how does this get me some of those, you know, what do you call them? Votes. So you got to get votes to do this. And they've got to turn out, I'll use Mayor Raz Baraka from Newark as an example. I could see him getting, 8 out of 10 black voters in New Jersey. It's certainly where his focus has been. You know, if 100% of black voters turn out to vote for Raz Baraka, he's about to win the Democratic nomination by the biggest landslide in history. But if he doesn't turn out his base, then he doesn't win. I mean, I know that sounds really simple, but what they're going to be doing, you know, aside from everybody smiling and putting stuff on social media, is now they've got to spend the next 3 weeks canvassing. They've got to, you know, on the Democratic side to do their labor walks, but they've got to turn out voters. And in New Jersey now, that's not just election day. That is, you know, they know exactly who received a vote by mail ballot. They are tracking every day who has returned them, and they are out there now chasing VBMs, calling people, knocking on their door, saying, "You got a VBM in September. You haven't returned it yet." Making sure that those get returned. Early in-person voting, which, you know, Matt, I mean, took off like gangbusters last year. Republicans really embraced a week of going to the polls, voting in person, but doing it at their own convenience. So now what these Republican campaigns need to do is get their voters to the polls, and they have 8 days to do that, 7 in early voting and election day. And in New Jersey last November, I think it was 49.6% of all votes were cast in advance of election day. So, you know, that's what they're going to be doing. They've got to turn their people out. And if on a Democratic side, you got a county organization that isn't up to the task, that hasn't, you know, because they've had the line, they're not accustomed to actually doing some of that work and turning people out to vote, then it opens the door for somebody else. So this is, you know, the keys in the turnout. It's not just, you know, how much money they've raised and, you know, where they're going and everything. It's really, you know, they've got to produce. They've got to get their voters to turn out. And that's, you know, that's everything. So the smiling photos are going to be great, but they need volunteers. They need paid canvassers. They need text messages and phone calls. And you know, Matt, it's harder than ever to reach voters. It's expensive. People don't answer their phones. And you have to, although you're young, you don't even know what a phone, a landline is probably,
I remember as a kid growing up in Oakland, okay, New Jersey, I'd go next door to Mrs. Stevens because she made the best banana bread I've ever had. So I'd go over there, get a loaf. She was like a third grandmother to me. And she had the little like rotary phone. And I loved to play with it. It's like I had discovered a dinosaur bone in my backyard, you know. Yeah, I just thought it was the neatest thing.
And I'm, you know, I'm much older than you. So, you know, I mean, you have no idea how hard it was. You know, you had to dial the phone number. Of course, it was only 7 digits in those days, not 10. But you had to dial the phone number and, one at a time. And then you had, you know, when you went all the way around the circumference of a circle, you had to let it come back. And then you had to put your finger in another number. And then numbers busy because there was no call waiting in those days. And you just had to keep doing it over and over. It was, you know, it was hard. I remember doing those in, you know, phone banking as a kid doing, you know, sitting there where they would, you know, they put 50 phone lines in a campaign headquarters and volunteers would come in and actually make phone calls all sitting at these long tables. Now it's all on computer with headsets and it's a high tech operation to turn votes out now.
And that changed.
And by the way, yeah. I mean, look, you know, you get real time on election day. You know, they do reporting every 2 hours, which means that the information is uploaded from the polling locations to the statewide voter registration system. You know, they know if Matt Rooney has voted or not. I mean, they look at a report and they'll be going down and they'll go, "Wow, Matt Rooney hasn't voted yet. You know, he's he should be our vote because we've identified him or whatever. And then they're running out trying to find you and turn you out. It's very high tech now. This is no longer, people with, crossing names out off a voting list at a polling location. This is exactly who voted and who didn't, and there's a chance to really go out and turn people out.
So if you want them to leave you alone, folks, just put the thing in the mailbox, right? It's not complicated.
No, Matt, no.
Can I tell you something? I did that on purpose because I wanted to see what you would say.
It's not good. What do you do with it? Now you gave me a headache. You made me feel, my sphincter has tightened and I say this in a completely nonpartisan, non-political fashion. Do not trust the United States Postal Service with your ballot. We just had an election, a fire commissioner election in February in Toms River. The ballot was postmarked before the election and in Toms River and arrived at the Board of Elections a month and a half later. I mean, there are secure ballot drop boxes all over every county in the state. You can go to the Division of Elections website, New Jersey Secretary of State. Find that list, put them in a secure ballot drop box. They will get picked up every day. There is a camera on the drop box so that there's complete security. Jersey's been doing this for a few years now. No allegations tampering with these drop boxes. Do not put the fate of democracy in the hands of postal workers.
I just wanted to make sure you're awake, my friend. But I'm looking right now. You're right. You can go to the Division of Elections website, and even in Salem County, Little Salem County, which has less population than Cherry Hill, there are probably over a dozen different locations you can go to drop off your ballot. So there's really no excuse, folks, to not participate. Let me ask you this. So we've moved past the debates. We're now going to have the primary in just a few weeks. To your point, it's already really underway. Primary day isn't really election day anymore. It's the day that we say stop, kind of, sort of. And then we're going to have a general election.
We hope people stop voting at 8 p.m., right?
Yeah. But it's New Jersey, so who knows what'll happen. And then we proceed into the general election. What do Republican prospects look like in your estimation as we move towards the main event here? Now, the statewide voter registration data has been interesting because ever since Joe Biden was inaugurated back in January 2021, there's been a pretty steady progression of Republicans chipping away, often very small, but chipping away at the Democrats' once mighty over 1 million voter registration statewide advantage. It's still pretty large today, but it's down to just about 800,000, and there's no sign of let up. Do you think the math is there? Do you think Republicans can get over the hump this year, or at least will the landscape allow for it as we sit here today?
So I think this is 100% a toss up election to start. Circumstances change, but one thing about New Jersey, and I'll go a little geeky on you, which is, New Jersey's still, the million vote advantage has gone down, but it's still 800,000 more Democrats. But New Jersey doesn't mind a Republican governor. And I talk about this all the time, how Republicans have not won a U.S. Senate seat in New Jersey since 1972. And since the last time Republicans won a Senate race, 48 other states have elected a Republican senator. Only Hawaii has gone longer than Jersey without sending electing a Republican to the U.S. Senate. But during that same time period, by the end of Phil Murphy's term this year, Democrats and Republicans will have occupied the governor's office the same number of years. And not since 1961 has have the Democrats or any party won three consecutive gubernatorial elections. Jersey is sort of built to look for that reset and change after 8 years of one party holding the governorship. And I got to tell you, there are some Democrats out there, specifically in Trenton, New Jersey, and in those very nice leather chairs, who they don't mind a Republican governor. It's actually like a little easier for them. So people, I think this race is absolutely in play. A lot will depend on what's happening nationally, but Donald Trump came within 6 points of Kamala Harris in New Jersey last year. Phil Murphy was elected after 8 years of a semi-Republican governor whose name we will not mention.
Banned from the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Banned, completely and totally. But Jersey sort of likes that. Jersey voters like that going back and forth. And they sort of see, and you can see, sort of the mindset of a Jersey unaffiliated, they call them independent voters, is they like alternating between parties. And Chitterelli, if he's the nominee, the guy is hungry. He wants this job. Spadia, Bramnick, whoever the nominee is, and then Cheryl or whoever wins their nomination, whether it's Josh Gottheimer or Phillip or Baraka, there's really nobody in the race that wouldn't make it competitive on either side. And that's, by the way, it's good for the state. Let the primaries nominate, who their parties want, and then go before the voters in a shorter campaign than this primary season, which began, 20 years ago or something. It seems like forever that this race has been going on. But then they make their case to the voters, and they see which one, they'll listen to the candidates on issues, and really, really, independents are going to determine who the next governor is. So it's got to be honing that message to what just, what working class people in New Jersey want. If you win the middle class independent vote in November, you're going to be the governor of New Jersey.
There's never been a better time to pay attention in New Jersey politics, folks. And besides the Matt Rooney show here on 1210 WPHT, where do you go? There's really no competition, if we're being honest about it. These races are competitive. The site that you need to make a regular part of your routine is the New Jersey Globe. NewJerseyGlobe.com, which was founded and continues to be operated by the very capable and very knowledgeable, if you didn't know it before, David Wildstein. You can find him over on X at Wildstein. Pretty easy handle to remember. Sir, greatly appreciate you joining us tonight, because I know you've had a heck of a week. You got to get some sleep. And, I appreciate you inviting me to participate in these debates. And I'm just going to say it at the risk of being a little corny. Congratulations, because you really did provide a service
Thank
for
you.
New Jersey voters with these debates. And even though not many people will say it, because that's not the kind of culture we live in, you do deserve some praise for it. So keep it up, my man.
Thank you. And always a pleasure to talk to you.
David Wildstein, everyone, here on The Matt Rooney Show. Let's take a quick timeout, and then we'll do a little bit more deep diving into the debate. We'll talk about my back and forth with Mr. Spadia that I know some of you have been tweeting at me about in just a moment.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
We talked to David Wildstein in the last segment about this week's debates here in New Jersey, the Great Garden State Democrats, and then, of course, the Republicans. And I was one of the panelists for the Republican debate. A pretty chill, substantive exchange of ideas. As David said, it surprised some, but we designed it that way. So we were pleasantly surprised that's what we got. Truth be told, Justin, the scrappiest moment in the debate was when Bill Spadia got a little testy with me. And look, I should stress this. I've gone into every debate that I've ever been a participant in as a panelist and a moderator. And it's been a few or several at this point in my tenure, with the very firm purpose of not debating anyone on stage. It could be tempting. I get it. Because someone says something you disagree with, or says something that's inane, or gets a fact wrong, or doesn't give as good an answer as you'd want to give. And it's your instinct as a political nerd to want to jump in and say, well, hold on a second. But that's not what people want to hear. You're not a candidate, and you're not doing a service to, forget about the candidates for a second, to the voters that are trying to use the debate to help make a decision by injecting yourself. We've seen it happen all too often, you know, famously with that ABC debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump in Philadelphia back in, what was that, September? September of last year?
Yes, but it was around September.
Yeah. But things got a little interesting with me and Bill, and I'll give you the context. So I've known Bill Spadia for years, and I don't know. I mean, I try very hard to be neutral in these things. I think he might be a little testy that I haven't shilled for him in this race because we've been friends. You know, used to get together occasionally for a beer. Maybe that has something to do with it. He unfollowed me on X several months ago. I noticed that. Maybe that should have been my first clue, you know, because politics isn't that much removed from high school. What I decided to do, Justin, is ask each candidate a question about their immigration positions they've staked out in the past, because all three candidates, John Bramnick, Jack Cittarelli, and Bill Spadia, have said things that are arguably inconsistent with their current unanimous position that they all want to end the sanctuary statehood policies of Governor Phil Murphy. So I asked John Bramnick about voting to confirm Phil Murphy's Attorney General, Matt Plackin, that is presently suing the Trump administration over its immigration policies. I asked Jack Cittarelli about his past support for licenses for illegal aliens. And then lastly, I turned to Bill Spadia to ask him about his own record. This is cut number one. Listen. And Mr. Spadia, you've endorsed a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens, which is a species of amnesty. Is your support for a pathway to citizenship consistent with the goal of ending sanctuary statehood?
So I love, let me talk to you at home now, if you're an undecided voter. What you're hearing tonight are talking points, political speak. You got one guy that just based on a textbook qualification would support somebody who has in their term in office as attorney general has actively gone after parents and gone after school boards. You got the other guy who didn't answer the question. Clearly, he still supports driver's licenses for illegals. Now, to the question, I think it's funny that we have a moderator here that literally read an attack mail piece to ask me that question. Out of 15,000 hours of all of that I've said on the radio and TV, they found one clip from a TV show I did about 8 years ago. And in that clip, I was asked a question as to whether or not a legal visa holder who had run afoul of the system and became undocumented, should they have a pathway if they have no crime, they own a home, they are married with kids in school, paying their taxes, and I said, absolutely. Nowhere, Matt, have I ever advocated a pathway to citizenship for illegal aliens. That was a very specific point that I made, and actually, it's supported by the President of the United States.
That was Bill Spadia at the debate, folks. Now, you heard him say that he made that comment about 8 years ago. Close. It was 2018. And the thing that's interesting, he suggested, Justin, you heard him, that I was reading from a mailer. I was actually there when he said it. It was from a show called Chasing News with Bill Spadia that I used to be on. I would go on, and it's when Bill and I became friends. He was the host. I was a panelist. They shot it up outside of Trenton, New Jersey. They actually had this studio in a somewhat rundown industrial park, Duck Island, the Duck Island exit. And one particular segment was on illegal aliens obtaining driver's licenses. It was myself and Bill, and there was one other panelist. And we were talking about driver's licenses, but Bill is kind of a non sequitur, jumped in and said during his opening soliloquy that he supported amnesty. And I have that audio for you here. I cut it up. This is cut number two.
More liberal than my conservative friends on it. I do believe in amnesty and a pathway to citizenship for people that want to be here working hard, not criminals.
So I mean there it is, right? Right from the horse's mouth. He said it. And it's not the only time he's made comments that run contrary to a hardline position on illegal immigration. Here's another example. Cut number three. I believe this is from maybe YouTube.
Cut a video.
For those who are undocumented, there should be a pathway to citizenship. A lot of my conservative friends don't agree with that. They don't like it. They live in this fantasy that you're going to deport 50 million people. No, you're not.
Well, that's not consistent with Donald Trump, right? As he said, the debate, which, look, I'm bringing the receipts because Spadia and a small cadre of his sycophants on X went after me following the debate saying, oh, it was an unfair question. You're a shill, this, that, and the other. I mean, look, I'm a big boy. I got a radio show. I've had a website that covers New Jersey politics since 2008. I've been called much worse. But always come with your receipts. Always come to arm with your receipts. I have the video. I wasn't reading from a mailer. It's the audio. Bill said it. That's what he believed. A better answer might have been, if it's true, that, hey, Matt, yeah, I used to believe in amnesty, but then Kamala Harris became the border czar and Joe Biden became president and they opened up our borders. And so I've changed my mind. That would have been a better answer than to turn around and accuse me of lying when, again, it's all on tape. That's the beauty of the internet, right? It lives forever. So people believe what they want to believe. That's the nature of the world. And it's not just in the political arena. It's everywhere. People are comfortable with lies when they serve their purpose. Me, again, my job in this debate, as I viewed it, was not to try to play gotcha with anyone. It was to give these guys an opportunity to give voters the information they need to make a decision. Like it or not, these candidates have been whacking each other over the head, metaphorically, with their respective past positions on immigration enforcement. I gave them each a chance. You know, Bramnick, just in case you didn't see it, he basically said, yeah, you know, it's not the only criterion upon which I judge an attorney general. Okay, you know, I may not agree with that because I'm not a fan of Matt Blacken, but that's his position. Jack Cittarelli, concerning illegal alien licenses, said, look, you know, I'm not for sanctuary statehood, but I think if these people are going to be here, I want them to have some kind of ID so that there's some kind of way to, you know, deal with them when they're on the road. And he said that he had spoken to law enforcement officers about that, and that's the position he formulated. Again, you may not agree with that, but he owned it. Bill just said, I never said that. Again, when you say something and you put it out there in the ether, like everything I'm saying here tonight, it lives forever. So I had one friend in Washington, D.C., Justin, who follows politics pretty closely, and he texted me about 36 hours later and said, you know, I'm kind of busy keeping my head down, decided to check in on the New Jersey debate. I expected to go to the social media pages of these candidates and see clips attacking each other, and lo and behold, they're going after you, Matt Rooney. You glutton for attention. I said, I swear to God, I just wanted to put on a good debate for everyone. I wanted to ask some questions that would help me make a decision. But no good deed, Justin, ever goes unpunished, does it?
Isn't that the truth? Somehow, some way. Maybe you'll get a few new members of the Rooney Army after this.
Or whatever it is, the Navy.
The Navy. You know, I mean, you are the field commissioned general of the Zeoli Army. The Rooney Battalion, maybe?
Well, after the last time I filled in for Rich Zeoli here at our station, 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard, right? Every weekday.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the reviews were glowing, and many of the Zeoli Army foot soldiers were on X, and they're saying, oh, you know, we need to get something for Rooney. Is it a Navy? Is it this? Zeoli shot every one of them down. Every single one of them. He does not want me to have my own paramilitary wing of the larger 1210 WPHT armed forces. So we're going to have to be special forces or something like that. We'll come up with something cute for a t-shirt. But we can't get the Supreme Commander angry. We have to keep him on our side. So if he doesn't want me to have my own branch, so be it. we'll figure out something else that's appropriate. I mean, maybe we'll be like, you know, the Rooney National Guard or something. The ROTC.
The Rooney ROTC, I like it.
There you go. We're the Coast Guard, right? We'll just patrol the Schuylkill River or something and protect our studios. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Get a little duck boat, be on the banks of the Schuylkill.
Yeah, oh, what an image that is. And that's what we like to do here on the Matt Rooney Show, paint you a picture. 1210 WPHT. 1 hour done, but don't worry. We still have another full hour just ahead here on our program. So fill up that coffee cup and be back here in just a moment.
This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand with Matt Rooney.
I am Matt Rooney. This is the Matt Rooney Show, our dose of dose for our bilingual listeners here at the program. Having a heck of a time as we head into Memorial Day weekend. The summer has arrived. Barbecues, swimming. Actually, none of this because the weather forecast looks miserable. Maybe if you have a heated pool, then maybe you can get away with it. You'll have that going for you. Of course, we remember that Memorial Day weekend isn't just about the unofficial start of summer. It's also remembering the men and women who've paid the ultimate price so that we can be free. I always like to put it in very real terms here on the Matt Rooney Show. You know, there are, and it's a humbling thing to think about, but there are young men who have died overseas serving this greatest country in God's creation so that Matt Rooney has the right to show up at 1210 WPHT and criticize elected officials for doing stupid, corrupt, anti-liberty, anti-freedom, anti the bottom line of the American taxpayer stuff. That is a sobering way to look at it, but also a very accurate way to remember their sacrifice. So, you know, I'm not here to lecture you about Memorial Day weekend, that it has to be a completely sober affair. I can assure you, Justin, that I will not be sober for all of Memorial Day weekend. Very little chance. But we should take a little bit of time out to reflect, right? Because once again, especially for my fellow New Jerseyans in that section of our listening area, we once again have a very big election coming up this year and a major decision to make concerning our future. Remember, there's a lot of people that gave everything so you'd have an opportunity to make that decision and have that control over your own destiny. Don't screw it up. Don't waste it. Take it seriously. Now, with that being said, Justin, I am now going to stop being a wet blanket, and we're going to enjoy this Memorial Day edition of our program. Justin, of course, Otero, one of my favorite producers. I would say of all, like, you know, eight producers at 1210 WPHD, he's definitely in the top seven. So whenever we get to work together, it's always a joy. Back from his Japanese adventure. Had a heck of a time. I'm looking at the photo you sent me right now. Which mountain is that?
That would be the one mountain everybody knows in Japan. That is Fuji-san.
That is Fuji. Okay. All right. I mean, I wanted to say that, but since it's the only one I know, I didn't want to be that guy.
You weren't gonna be racist. You weren't gonna be that. That is in fact the one, the only Mount Fuji itself.
You know me so well. That's what I was worried about. I'm worried our massive Japanese audience would say, "Oh, Matt's a bigot because he said Fuji."
How do you know we weren't trying to expand into the Japanese market? You know?
Well, no. Maybe we do. Maybe we do.
Oh, hello to any Japanese listeners. If you're there, you know, trying to learn English through the Matt Rooney Show, we appreciate you. We see you, and hope you enjoy the show.
So. I have never had a listener tell me that they use this program to learn English. You should not learn English, by the way, from a guy from Jersey. Okay? It's a very distinct dialect. You could do better, right? I will help you find someone if you want someone. I did have someone come up to me at an event a few months ago, and I was very flattered by this, who told me that he emigrated to this country with his parents. And you know which station they listened to when they were trying to learn about America and civics and politics?
What
1210 WPHT, baby.
Really?
And they listened to the Matt Rooney Show, among other programs, right? Like, I think they were listening to the Doms, the Oli. And I didn't know what to say. Besides, I'm so sorry, you know? I wanted to say, here's the Federalist Papers, you know? Here's the Tocqueville, you know? Like, here's so many better sources. But no, seriously, I mean, it's we don't really like to think of ourselves maybe as being in the public service business, but maybe sometimes we are. And speaking of awesome responsibilities and remembering that we are kind of standing on the shoulders of other people, I thought that was really cool. So if you are here from Japan, maybe you follow Justin back in his luggage coming back to the U.S. from
there was no
the
space.
World.
There was no space left in that luggage. Let me assure you of that.
Full of Hello Kitty lunchboxes and whatever the heck else you bought.
I almost had to buy a new suitcase. I had to sit on mine. I had to move stuff around. I was playing Tetris with my luggage, trying to make sure that everything could fit and I wouldn't have to spend another 10,000 yen on a new suitcase that I was going to have to spend more money on to check into my American Airlines flight, because Lord knows they would have charged me exorbitant fees.
Oh, yes, they would have. Are you a big video game guy?
Love them.
Because my friend that I mentioned in the first hour who went to Japan told me that, you know, here in the United States, you go to a city, you're at a bar on a Thursday or Friday night, what do you see? You see lots of young people in there drinking, flirting, hanging out, sometimes playing Quizzo or something. Over in Japan, where they actually have worse birth rates than we do, young people will apparently, and by young, I'm talking about young professionals, you know, 20s, they will leave work. Instead of going to a bar for a happy hour, they will go to a video game parlor and they will sit there and they will play video games. And I don't think there's any alcohol.
I saw that several times.
Yeah,
no, there's no, you can get like tea and coffee and stuff like that, but there was no alcohol involved.
So they don't drink. Is marijuana a thing in Japan?
No. They even hear the word marijuana, and you are inspected. And if they, God forbid, they find any, you are hauled off.
Interesting.
But no, to counter your point, the Japanese are very, very strong drinkers. Underrated in the. They can put away some alcohol tier list. You know, you've got your stereotypes
sake,
like Irish people can drink. But let me tell you, them salarymen in Tokyo and Osaka and Kyoto, I watched them put away pints of beer like they were drinking water. It was insane.
Well, I will say this. I've got a friend. He may be listening this evening. If you're out there, Abe, who is like a whiskey connoisseur. What do they call for wine? Sommelier, right? I mean, he is whatever the equivalent of a sommelier is for whiskey. And he introduced me to Japanese whiskeys. And there are some really good ones. I think the one was called, and I know I'm butchering this, I think it's Hibiki or something like that. Woo! You can drink that and have a good time, or you can strip the paint off your garage if it's peeling and you need to repaint it. But it is tasty. So I don't know.
I looked it up. I saw. Yeah, I think I had a couple of shots of this at one of the bars we went to. Incredible stuff.
So maybe the next time you go, then we need to do a whiskey tour. People talk about doing whiskey tours of, like, you know, Tennessee or whatever. We do a Japanese whiskey tour. I would do that.
We wanted to go to our trip, we kind of moved all around the country. We started, we landed in Tokyo Haneda. Then we took the bullet train up north to Morioka. And in Morioka, we only had one day. In hindsight, we probably should have, like, maybe made it 2 days, but we were supposed to go to this sake brewery and go on, like, a tour, and it just did, because it was raining, and it was just like, ugh. It's one of the things that I regret that we didn't get to do.
There's always next time. Did you go with your girlfriend? Is that who you were there with?
No, I went with 8 of my friends.
Oh, and, wow, so it was a whole crew.
Yeah, it was a whole crew of us. It was
It was originally supposed to be my one friend did bring his girlfriend, and my other friend was going to bring his, but she got a full-time job offer, like, literally the week before we left. And it was like, hey, your orientation starts our first week there, and your first week is the second week we're there, and you cannot move it. So you're kind of screwed on that.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you had an awesome time, my friend. Things were not slow back here without you. Very, very busy week in New Jersey politics, Pennsylvania, beyond. We like to say here on the program, we look back at the week gone by to prepare you for the week ahead. And it's hard to know where to start with the week gone by this time around. We talked a lot about New Jersey in the first hour, the debates. Plenty of other things happening, though, in and around my home, including the fact that none other than Alina Haba has now, in her capacity as interim U.S. attorney for the District of New Jersey, decided to charge a sitting congresswoman, LaMonica McIver, for her involvement in an alleged assault at a facility in Newark that ICE is using as a detainment facility. It's called Delaney Hall. And I know the other shows on our station have been talking about it. I had the video up over on SaveJersey.com. Alina Haba now taking the congresswoman to court. And Donald Trump himself has weighed in and said, you know, goodness gracious, how could you not, right? I mean, based upon the tape, is anybody above the law? I would hope not, but we've been through too much history just in the past few years, folks, that we know that very often there are elected officials that are above the law because they have a D at the end of their name. That's sadly how it's worked. But if you watch this video, and I'll retweet it so you can check it out if you missed it, tell me whether or not what you see is any different or any better, maybe that's the way to put it, than the video that you witnessed on January 6, 2021. It was a mini riot at Delaney Hall, and the video certainly makes it look like the congresswoman was right in the middle of it. Alina Haba not holding back. Also, Nancy Mace from South Carolina, who's been on the Matt Rooney Show before, she introduced a resolution to expel LaMonica McIver from the United States House of Representatives. She says, on May 9th, McIver didn't just break the law, she attacked the very people who defend it. Referring, of course, to the ICE agents that were on scene. Attacking Homeland Security and ICE agents is just disgraceful. It's an assault. And again, I ask you, everybody's entitled to their presumption of innocence. But assuming she's guilty, and that video is pretty damning, Democrats love to talk about repercussions for attacking our sacred institutions. Mace is right. I mean, how does it get any worse than attacking the very officials who are protecting our homeland from some very bad people, some very dangerous folks. So we're going to continue to follow this storyline very, very closely. This is serious business. She could do time in jail, Justin, if she's ultimately convicted. It's going to be harder for her to get expelled from Congress. There have only been a handful of members of Congress, I think like six in the entire history of the chamber, that have been kicked out. Three of them were kicked out in 1861, so it was related to the Civil War. So only three in the post-Civil War era. The most recent, though, was pretty recent. George Santos.
That sassy queen himself, George Santos.
Mr. Sassy Pants himself, you're right. That was only 2 years ago. I can't believe it's 2 years since that happened, actually. So she's in very interesting company if Congress ultimately decides to dump her. And also, even though that's something I'm focusing on, obviously, because of where I live, one of the biggest storylines out of Washington this week, the big, beautiful bill, Justin, finally advancing. I thought it would never happen. I didn't think I'd see the day. Got through a floor vote of the House of Representatives by a single vote with only, I think, one Republican. Was it just one Republican, Thomas Massie? I got to double check that.
Let me take a look.
I know Massie voted against it. Massie gave a speech on the floor of the House lamenting how it would add to the debt, which You know, I know a lot of you have mixed emotions on Thomas Massie. Some of you love him outright. Some of you think that he's a scrub. I mean, look, I'll say this. I am very sympathetic as someone that pays taxes and has young kids that we are leaving our children a legacy of debt from which their chance of ever escaping seems to diminish all the time. But sometimes I think a few of these Republicans in that chamber and online forget how narrow that House majority is. Republicans had much less of an excuse back in, let's say, 2003. 2003, Republicans won the midterm election. George W. Bush is president. It was a post-9/11 rally for the party of the president who was prosecuting the war on terror. Republicans had like a 25-seat advantage in the House of Representatives. What did they do with it? Medicaid Part D. We didn't get any conservative reform. We didn't get any overhaul of our bureaucratic state or how we flush money down the drain. Medicaid Part D. That was a time to throw down the gauntlet and declare enough is enough. Right now, we are getting by the skin of our teeth here. You know, a couple Republican congressmen get a stomach bug, or you know, the FAA causes a delay at an airport somewhere in the country, and Hakeem Jeffries is de facto speaker. The margins are that tight. So, you know, is this the time to hold up landmark tax relief when Americans desperately need it? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. But as ever, I'm curious what you think. You can always tweet at me over on X, at Matt Rooney NJ is my handle. But right now you're listening to me on 1210 WPHT, The Matt Rooney Show. We're going to take a quick break to fill our coffee mugs, get a little caffeinated. No such thing as too much caffeine. Don't believe those kooky doctors. And we'll be back with more of our program in just a moment.
This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Matt Rooney here on The Matt Rooney Show, celebrating because I love being with my friend Justin, who's back from Japan. I also am happy that the big, beautiful bill is finally advancing. I know that the White House feels that way. Here's the great Carolyn Leavitt, frequent guest here during the campaign on 1210 WPHT, which is who was on this program, explaining the stakes from the White House as only she can.
Last night, Republicans in the House passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the most significant piece of legislation in years. There were a lot of good faith negotiations in the Republican conference leading up to the final passage, but as always, President Trump came in at the end to bring all sides together and get this deal done. This One Big Beautiful Bill will implement President Trump's Make America Great Again agenda by delivering the largest tax cut in American history for middle-class families, the working class, and small businesses. The One Big Beautiful Bill fulfills President Trump's promises of no tax on tips, which was applauded today by the CEO of Uber, no tax on overtime, a Made in America auto tax break, Trump savings accounts for newborn babies, and substantial tax cuts for our amazing seniors' Social Security benefits. The One Big Beautiful Bill will permanently secure the border by delivering the largest border security investment in history, funding at least 1 million annual removals of illegal aliens to carry out the largest deportation campaign ever, finishing the Trump border wall, and giving pay raises and bonuses for our incredible ICE and Border Patrol agents. The One Big Beautiful Bill protects the Medicaid program and its benefits for the most vulnerable Americans that the program was designed for by kicking off 1.4 million illegal aliens from receiving benefits and implementing common sense work requirements for able-bodied Americans. The One Big Beautiful Bill also helps get our fiscal house in order by carrying out the largest deficit reduction in nearly 30 years with $1.6 trillion in mandatory savings. Every single Democrat in the House of Representatives who voted against all of these common sense and massively popular policies, the Democrat Party has never been more radical and out of touch with the needs of the American people. The One Big Beautiful Bill is the final missing piece toward ushering the golden age of America. The Senate should pass this as quickly as possible and send it to President Trump's desk for a final signature.
ICE is definitely going to need those pay raises if they have to keep tangling with LaMonica McIver, Justin. They should get some hazard pay.
They are definitely earning their paycheck when it comes to whatever they're paying, double it, triple it. I don't care what they have to do.
Yeah, take my money, ICE agents. You know, and that's the joke of it too, right? They have to deal with MS-13, coyotes, smuggling drugs, human trafficking, and then they have to fight members of Congress.
You spend all your time dealing with the cartel and dealing with all of these things, and then just to put the cherry on top, you have to deal with some snooty, in your face congressmen and women. Entitled. That's the word I'm looking. Entitled congressmen and women who come just to make your job even more stressful for no reason other than for political posturing.
Well, that's the craziest thing too, right? It's not even just a matter of ideological disagreement. She knew what she was doing. She wanted to become a celebrity. She wants to go on MSNBC, CNN, the few liberal podcasts that have more members of the audience than five. That's what this was all about. It was a calculated publicity stunt by her and Roz Baraka, the mayor of Newark, who's running for governor. Alina Habe actually decided to drop his charges and offered to give him a tour of the facility. He wanted to get inside so badly. Let's see if he takes her up on it. But let's talk about this big, beautiful bill for a second, because there's a lot of beautiful stuff in it that Caroline didn't mention explicitly in her summary that she gave the press corps this week. For those of you that have a flight anytime soon, you know, Justin got back from Japan just fine, but Newark International Airport, Newark Liberty, has been one of the epicenters of the meltdown that is the product of years of neglect of our traffic control system. It's going to fully modernize our traffic control system. That's what the White House is promising. So that's huge. There's going to be money that's going to be dedicated to making it so that our airports are how we remember them, right? Relatively efficient, all things considered, when there's not a blizzard. And don't forget, the Biden administration, despite repeated warnings on this subject, did absolutely nothing. The left didn't care until President Trump took the oath of office back in January. This is another biggie here, and this is going to upset some of you groomers out there. This is going to end federal taxpayer-funded sex changes for minors. I get it. At a time when Americans can't afford groceries, electric bills are spiking, there are many serious problems and challenges out there on the horizon, and not just on the horizon, that we're currently in the middle of. Democrats continue to have the greatest priorities, don't they? Protecting the right of a doctor to chemically castrate a child because the parent thinks it's having a trans child is the new cool accessory, right? To talk about at the coffee shop. That's what they care about. That's what they want to spend your money on. But what this is specifically going to do, Justin, is it's going to prohibit Medicaid from funding gender transition procedures for underage children. It's wonderful. Good. It's a good thing. Yeah. And I mean, again, like this one continues to twist me because I have such trouble understanding why that's controversial. You know, like we've all seen these memes online of cat ladies, and by that I don't mean like the folks that J.D. Vance was poking fun of back during the election. I'm talking about like women that get too much plastic surgery and they start to resemble extras from musical Cats by Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know, you see some of these ladies on like these Real Housewives shows, and you start you start hearing like the cat songs, memories, you know, because that's what they look like. That's an adult decision. You know, you may be ridiculous, and maybe there's arguably a medical ethics discussion to be had about all that, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about kids that are too young to consent to having their testicles removed or having their breasts removed, right? It should be illegal. It's child abuse. Let's just call it what it is. I mean, I even hate using these terms like gender reassignment because they attempt to sanitize something that is evil and simple. There's simplicity in how evil it is. So good on President Trump for making good on another promise. It's also going to protect Medicaid for Americans by kicking out 1.4 million illegals. Remember, this is something the DOJ has been digging into. Illegal immigrants receive Medicaid benefits. What a great use of our funds. At a time when there's veterans in our listening area tonight and well beyond, since you can listen to the Matt Rooney Show on the podcast, who are waiting for procedures. Some of them are homeless. They have PTSD. They can't get any coverage. They can't get any care. And yet we're paying for a coyote that breaks into our country. Some MS-13 member that moves to Maryland to start a new life.
Oh, but you couldn't be talking about the Maryland father, could you?
I am not. I don't know what you're talking about, dude. No clue.
Where have you been in Japan the last 2 weeks? The last 2 weeks?
I'm big in Japan. We've been over that.
Yeah, Matt Rooney, big Japan guy.
Wouldn't that be funny if you went to Japan and all of a sudden you're in some storefront, you know, shopping for, I don't know, whatever the heck it is you eat in your Japan. I guess you're getting some of your ramen and you see like a bunch of like Matt Rooney Show t-shirts, you know.
You got the podcast art where it's the glasses and the microphone.
Right. You've got this like, what's the Japanese anime? You've got like an anime version of like Dan Valdez or something like that, you know. That'd be amazing.
Dan Valdez in a Japanese schoolgirl outfit.
Yeah, holding a teddy bear, licking a lollipop. Yeah,
there probably. You go.
I'm pretty positive that exists over there, actually. I bet anything on that.
You think it probably exists there. I saw so many things that made me question what I am doing.
Reality, fundamental reality. Well, you came back just in time, though, to get the tax cuts that are in this big beautiful bill. It's going to deliver permanent tax relief. Remember, President Trump's 2017 tax bill set to expire tax year 2025, so running out of time. But it's estimated that this new legislation, if it makes its way to the president's desk, is going to put an extra $5,000 on average in Americans' pockets. And there's going to
be... Who doesn't love more money?
Right. And it's your money, right?
Who doesn't love more of your money? More of your own money?
I'm a fan of that. And many people are going to get a double-digit decrease. So... And it's not just the wealthy, right? So if you earn around $30,000 to $80,000, which is a lot of people, your tax liability is going to decrease by about 15%. That's significant. And there's no tax on tips. How often did we talk about that? No tax on overtime. There's even tax relief for Social Security recipients. We've heard the familiar attack from Democrats in recent days about how, President Trump's tax bill disproportionately helps the wealthy. It's wealthy people that are going to get the most benefit. You've even seen some of the publications, the legacy publications out there, repeating the same tired, stupid talking points. Well, I got news for you. There's this thing called math, right? And when you overlay it with our tax system, there is a significant number of Americans that don't pay taxes because we have a progressive federal tax system, meaning the more you earn, then generally the more you are going to pay. It's not complicated. So when you've got a significant portion of the population at the bottom end of that pyramid, with no tax liability, then shocker, when you cut taxes, it's going to be the people that are going to benefit the most are the ones that are actually earning the money. Here's some statistics for you. The top 1%, Justin, of earners pay 46% of all federal income tax.
Whew.
The top 50%, so we're just adding another 4% there, pay 97.7% of all taxes. And, you know, again, you apply these facts to the current debate and hear Democrats say, well, why aren't tax cuts going more to the poor? Well, the poor, many poor people do not pay income tax. They pay other kinds of taxes. You go to the store, you buy something, you pay sales tax. That's a regressive tax. But that's not what we're talking about here. If you want to complain about your sales tax, take that up with Josh Shapiro or Phil Murphy. Right?
I mean, how many of these Democrats, though, you know, we're breaking down these numbers, like hardcore breaking down these numbers, but how many of these Democrats are humanities, liberal arts majors? They took one elementary statistics class in college, and that's all they get. I would know. I was a radio, television, and film production major. I only had to take one math class.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was politics, right? And then I took a bunch of theology classes. I went to Catholic University, so I pretty much had to either run for Pope or go to law school. Those are my choices with my education. But it's fundamentally one of the problems with our system. I look at the New Jersey legislature, which is even worse than what you've got over at Harrisburg for our Keystone State friends. I mean, very few people in that building have had real jobs. There's some lawyers, obviously, which depending on what kind of lawyer you are, that dictates whether your job is real or not. You've got union organizers, you've got activists, you've got people that have always worked in state and local government. Look, I stand in judgment of no man, but when you want to try to improve the lives of average Americans, when you elect people that have no point of reference for what those Americans go through, can you realistically expect better results? It'd be insane to think that you could. So bottom line, the big, beautiful bill, it is big, it is beautiful, and it is definitely a very fair quality compromise that I hope the Senate moves on. Everyone's celebrating, and they have every right to, but remember, now this goes to the Senate, where Republicans also have a majority, but it's a relatively slim one. And Senator, that's Latin for snake. So you can't be sure what's going to happen from here on out. But it's progress after months of stasis. So I guess we'll take what we can get. You're listening to the Matt Rooney Show here on 1210 WPHT. Let's take another timeout. Actually, our last timeout of this particular episode. But don't worry, we got plenty more time to have some fun and maybe even learn something, even if it's just about Justin's Japanese adventure. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back in a second.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
And that song will now forever and always be associated with the last scene in which television series, Justin? Groundbreaking television series.
That would be Breaking Bad.
Very good.
I remember watching that when it came, with the final episode. It was like late October 2013. I was a freshman in high school when that came out.
Okay. God, that makes me feel old. Okay. All right. It's true. There's no lie in what you say. Great show, and remarkable for the following reason. It did not run a minute longer than it needed to. Even The Sopranos, which I'm partial to because it was kind of the originator of that genre, and being a Jersey guy, you know, it's cool to see places that you know from your backyard. Arguably, it went maybe like a season too long. They didn't need to have that whole like A and B final season. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah. Breaking Bad, I think it was 5 seasons. Not any wasted space, or at least minimal wasted space. Not too many slow episodes. So
Vince Gilligan knew what he was doing. He knew the perfect length, just when to pull the plug, so to speak. But just perfect from beginning to end. And even the supplementary material, Better Call Saul, it's not as good as Breaking Bad. Some people will argue that it is, but it's still just the perfect length. And Vince Gilligan is a master of his craft.
Well, it's never going to be the original, but it's pretty darn good. I give Vince Gilligan a very, very high approval rating. The guy hit it out of the park. You know who else has a pretty good approval rating right now? Donaldus Magnus, folks. President Trump. New Qantas Insights poll out this week of the president and some national issues. Job approval, upside, not down, not upside down, right side up. 48%, 48.3% if you want to be precise, approve. 47.8% disapprove. So that's good news. Something interesting, since we've been talking about immigration quite a bit tonight, as we very often do, do you support mass deportations of illegal immigrants? Is it good for the country or bad for the country? 59% say good for the country. 37% say bad.
Democrats,
that issue has been won.
Yeah, Democrats would have you believe it's 99% disagree or 1% agree.
Well, and this is why that stupid stunt with flying down to El Salvador, you know, it was not only was it goofy, but it was just politically ill-advised because it's not where the American people are. They want you to fight for them, not someone who isn't even a citizen. I say it to the point where I know some of you are probably tired of hearing me lecture you. Politics is priorities, right? Do people believe that you share their priorities? The Democrat Party doesn't even pretend in 2025 that they care about you and they care about the things that you would rank as the most important issues of the day. And it's starting to show in the polling. Speaking of bad priorities, have you ever heard of this guy? I think it's Hassan Piker over at the New York Times.
Hassan Piker isn't affiliated with the New York Times. He is a political activist Twitch streamer. I have heard Piker.
He's a Twitch streamer.
Yes, that man is live.
What is a Twitch streamer?
So here's
you're a Gen Zer speaking to someone who is borderline Gen X.
Well, it's a good thing you have a terminally online Gen Z producer manning the helm.
It comes in handy.
So Twitch.tv is a streaming platform where normally the average streams on there are like video game, like people playing Call of Duty, people playing League of Legends, people making art. Some people do art on there. Some people will do what's called IRL streaming, which is where they'll have a camera and a backpack and they'll go exploring around different places around the world, kind of like to show you around. Like, it's a hodgepodge of people that are live. There's content going 24/7. And what Hassan does is he spends about anywhere between 8 to 10 hours a day, every single day of the week, just lives talking about politics, talking about, and Hassan is a very leftist content creator.
Just like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, it just live covering political events, live covering everything, and you have to. He is a self-proclaimed socialist, so you are getting left. Yeah, he is very open.
So you know why I'm thinking New York Times, and you're right. I apologize. Not the New York Times, because I remember reading about this guy in the New York Times.
Oh, he gets coverage all the time.
And they called him the future of progressivism. So there you go. So this guy Hassan is apparently making some waves because he's made all these anti-Semitic comments, I guess, allegedly. And of course, we just had this horrible attack down in Washington, D.C., where you had these two young people, beautiful young couple, that was set to get engaged.
Not to sidetrack you from this.
No, go ahead.
Have you heard of Hassan's comments about 9/11 before?
Do I want to?
Mr. Piker has been on the record as saying, and this is a direct quote from him, America deserved 9/11 for their interventionist policies in the Middle East.
Wow. What a charming
guy. Stunning and brave.
Yeah, so apparently some people are really taking him to task for some of his rhetoric. Remember, only conservatives, Republicans, MAGA, America First, are held out as having to be responsible for their rhetoric and the consequences, right? When lefties and crazies say wacky things, very often the same rules do not apply. But he said some pretty awful stuff. Apparently he's called Jews inbred. That's absolutely lovely. And he's made some really aggressively awful comments about Jews and about Israel, which look, I understand the argument that some people make that, all right, you know, I mean, just because you don't agree with Israel's foreign policy or domestic actions, it doesn't make you, you know, anti-Semite. Okay, fine. I understand that point, but we live in reality, and let's be honest here. Very often, the two things go hand in hand. I'm not saying they have to, but they do, right? Most people that hate Israel, there is a strong anti-Semitism thread that runs throughout their thinking. And it's ugly. And then I see there's one tweet out there this week, Justin. This guy, again, the New York Times loves him, who apparently suggested it might be a false flag, the attack in D.C. But then immediately kind of like says something to, I guess, attempt to moderate it. He goes, the guy was genuine with his actions. What does that even mean?
He was genuine in murdering two innocent civilians? Okay.
And look, you said it. You're online all the time. I watch this stuff. I have a website. I'm on the radio. It's just crazy to think that these people exist in our society. We've always had hateful people, but now they have a platform. Now, you know, before you get your panties in a twist, I'm not suggesting we go around like the United Kingdom and take down everyone who says something off color. But I mean, this would appear to go beyond off color, politically incorrect, right? I mean, some of this stuff could allegedly be equated to incitement. So, you know, there's lots of reasons for sober reflection this weekend. Remember that, you know, even in America, even in 2025, in our nation's capital, if you're Jewish, you have to worry for your safety. That's been the case for a long time in a lot of European capitals. You have to be worried for your safety. I mean, what is happening to Western civilization that we allow these cancer cells to crop up and replicate right in our backyard? We got to do better. We have to do better. And it starts, of course, with education and the culture, where we should not be promoting these types of ridiculous ideologies. We shouldn't be indulging people that think that there's some moral equivalency between Israel and Gaza. There was an anti-Gaza protester at the debate the other night, by the way, Justin.
Oh, really? How yeah. did that go?
Yeah, someone stood up. Naturally, she was like 6,000 pounds.
colored hair?
And started, I didn't catch her hair color because those bright lights were in my face.
Oh, the stage lights are, they'll get you.
Yeah, so like I couldn't really see, but I got enough of her to know that there's a lot of her. And they took her out of there. And she's screaming about the DOJ or the DOD and all this other stuff. And then naturally at the end, she's getting pulled down to the hallway. I hear, free Palestine, free Gaza. And I'm thinking, of course. You know, it's become...
That's the cherry on top.
It's a catch-all rallying cry for, you know, objectively stupid, boorish people. So there you go. That was a fun part of the debate. It wouldn't be a good debate without one protester.
Nah, it kind of brings it all together.
Yeah. But look, this whole issue that we're discussing in the context of the tragedy in D.C. is not obviously restricted to the United States. It's worse in Europe. This is from Breitbart. Syrian migrant suspect. Mass stabbing may have been terrorism, say German prosecutors. German federal prosecutors have taken over the investigation into a mass stabbing this week, allegedly by a Syrian migrant, as they believe there may be an Islamist motive to the attack. A Syrian migrant identified 35-year-old as Mahmoud Mehmed. I probably messed that up. Was arrested on Monday by police on attempted murder charges in relation to a mass stabbing in, I think it's Blaelfeld, in North Rhine-Westphalia. Five people were injured and four of them seriously. The German justice minister revealed they barely escaped with their lives. But according to the German newspaper Die Welt, they believe they may have found evidence for Islamicism as a motivating factor behind behind these attacks. Surprise, surprise. And they were all twisted when J.D. Vance told them, hey, maybe you should, you know, start caring about your borders and your economies and, you know, the fate of your own civilization, instead of lecturing the United States by, you know, promoting Greta Thunberg and telling us we need to all drive Flintstone cars so that
what has she been up to?
Greta?
Yeah, I haven't heard her do anything notable. It seems like she was, 2018 to the pandemic, and then after, like, post-pandemic, just kind of vanished off the face of the earth, as far as I can tell. Maybe I'm just blissfully unaware in a bubble all my own, which I like.
I'm sure she's still out there, but I think that her fate is tied to the fortunes of the radical climate movement, and Greta, I remember, I think it was back in like 2019. That's when she was all the rage. Yeah, she was Times Person of the Year in 2019. And then you know what happened in 2020? The election
couldn't
happened.
Be. Yeah.
The pandemic happened. Joe Biden becomes president and everything is just set on fire. And now all of a sudden, fairy tales about your SUV bringing about the end of the world no longer can be taken seriously. Back to that whole priorities thing that I was talking about before, right? So, yeah, I mean, she's still out there somewhere putting plenty of hot air into the atmosphere. There's probably a little floating ozone hole that you can trace the trajectory directly back to her mouth, but there just isn't the oxygen anymore for these con artists. And that's a good thing, folks. We are making some progress. If you ever doubt it, it is the case. Due in no small part to the hard work of the Matt Rooney Show, no doubt. I am, of course, Matt Rooney. We appreciate you joining us. Remember, you can listen on the radio every Saturday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard on 1210 WPHD or anytime, anywhere via the Odyssey app or over at our podcast, which can be found where all quality podcasts are located. And, of course, welcome back, my friend Justin Otero. Appreciate all your hard work.
Great being
show.
Back here.
Until next time, folks, remember, stay safe, stay sane, and keep fighting for this greatest nation in God's creation. It's worth it. And a very happy Memorial Day weekend.
This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand with Matt Rooney.